It is Sunday. It's a few minutes after 8 o'clock, and this is Out of Line, coming to you live from the Fox Sports Studio in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and we come your way every Sabbath morning on Fox Sports 1340, and we are streaming live at lvsportsnetwork.com. Joining me in studio to make sure everything does what it is supposed to do is future Nevada Hall of Fame broadcaster and producer. I'll say broadcaster. I'm hearing you all the time these days on the radio. Our boy Magnum. And you can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM. And when you're on Facebook today, please check out, like, and follow our page, which is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. Feel free to get involved. Opinions and input are what sports radio is all about. The Fox Sports Studio line is 702-876-1340. So use it and be heard.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
It is time for What's on Tap, pouring out thanks to Bubby's University. Today in the NBA, it's the All-Star Game. My feeling, because the NFL actually put on another decent Pro Bowl a few weeks ago, is that other than the skills challenge, that still has maybe a little bit of entertainment value, the NBA All-Star Game is boring. And without question, it is the worst All-Star Game of them all now. It has become a three-point shootout. Last year, there were a combined 139 three-point attempts. And when the All-Stars weren't jacking up threes, they were driving down a wide-open lane for a dunk or completely unimpeded layups. Nobody plays defense. When I feel like seeing trick shots and showboating, I'll watch the Harlem Globetrotters because that's what they're paid to do. So that being said, I'm not spending much time on that subject today. But I'm not blowing off the NBA. There are things that I want to talk about, like gearing up to see the same two teams play in the NBA Finals again. And with March Madness right around the corner, it is time to start, you know, taking a look at college basketball. And like it or not, if college basketball is the subject, Gino Auriemma has to be mentioned. And he will be today. Also, when I'm talking college basketball, there's no one I like doing that more than with Emily Van Buskirk. She is the college football and basketball lead writer for the sportsfanjournal.com. Emily will be joining the show in a bit. And if you plan on filling out some brackets next month, you'll be glad you're here. Also, stick around to find out why UNLV is both blazing and the subject matter of today's Fact This. On tap at Bubby's University, earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. Where the only majors are mayhem and good times. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Flamingo and Tropicana. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. Well, Mags, I got to ask you straight up. Are you going to watch the All-Star Game?
Probably not.
For reasons that I kind of just alluded to?
Pretty much. And, you know, I mean, I was lucky enough to be able to attend the All-Star Game here 10 years ago. Believe it or not, it was 10 years ago already that we had the NBA All-Star Game in our city. But that's probably the last All-Star Game I've watched from beginning to end. You know, when I was a kid, it was a little bit different. It was cold, dark, back home, where I grew up, by the time the All-Star Game was coming on. So it was kind of like a night thing. And we had school the next day. So it was like, okay, we could stay up and watch it. You know, you got guys like Jordan, Dominique, Ewing, Magic, Bird. Basically the golden age of the NBA. We seem to be heading into another golden age of the NBA right now. But I don't know. I don't really have an interest in it. If there's a good soccer game on, I'll watch that instead of the NBA All-Star game.
You think we're heading into it? Is it a golden shower age of the NBA? Because, Mags, I don't see it. I mean, I'm telling you right now, basketball to me, and I'll ask you this before I get into that. I just want one more thing because I don't want to talk about the All-Star game. I just want to ask you, did you see Derek Jones in the slam dunk contest yesterday? Of course, Derek Jones Jr., former UNLV running rebel. He might just carve out an NBA career after all. He has as good of hops as anyone I've seen at his size, man. That was pretty spectacular. A couple of between-the-legs windmill jams. It's not like the guy's 6'10". He's like 6'6".
Yeah.
And boy, it reminded me, the only guy I've seen that could jump like that, it was in a movie, that guy, the GOAT, Earl Manigault. They showed a movie, I don't know if you ever saw it, I kind of told you that before. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was asked when he retired, who was the toughest guy he ever had to defend, and he mentioned this guy, Earl Manigault, from his high school days. Guy never made it in the NBA, had a drug problem, never even really played in college, but in this movie, they were showing him in high school, he would bet people and go to playgrounds, put a $20 bill on top of the backboard and bet him. He was in 10th grade that I can jump up and take the $20 bill off. And he used to hustle people like that. That was the kind of hops this guy had. Derrick Jones, to me, has that kind of jumping ability. I mean, his hang time mags, his ability to float in the air. That was the only exciting thing I saw. I mean, yeah, you know, Glenn Robinson III, it was a really nice dunk that won it for him where he went over three people and a teammate. Man, I'm just so disenchanted with it all. I really am, man. I mean, if there was one All-Star game I think they could do away with now, I used to say it would be the Pro Bowl. Now, to me, it's the NBA All-Star game.
Well, I did watch Derrick Jones Jr. last night. I thought he got screwed in a way because, quite honestly, Glenn Robinson basically did the same dunk twice.
But he's a D-League player. They couldn't give it to him. He's barely on the run. You know, Mags, he has five baskets in the NBA right now, and three of them are dunks.
Hey, it doesn't matter. He's on the Phoenix Suns roster right now. He scored the other night against, I think he had 6 points against the Lakers the other night. But, you know, I just thought he was a little more creative. I mean, Robinson basically did the same dunk twice. I don't care if he jumped over the mascot. It was the same dunk. And, you know, I guess maybe I'm a little biased because obviously being a Rebel and having gone to school here and Derrick Jones being a Rebel as well, I wanted to see him win. So maybe I am a little biased. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not. But I just thought maybe him missing that first dunk in the finals was you know, held against him a little bit. But I just didn't really think that that Glenn Robinson did anything that was not done before.
Nothing spectacular. I mean, like I said, it's boring. I mean, what are you watching for? The skills competition, the three-point competition? I mean, the whole thing, Kyrie Irving got in the finals of the three-point competition, which made it a little bit exciting. Klay Thompson shot terribly.
Yeah.
But either way, I just couldn't. It's like I'm watching it and I'm bored. And like I said to you, I didn't really plan on spending a lot of time with the Pro Bowl either this year. And I ended up watching the thing from cover to cover and enjoyed it. I actually saw them trying for that extra $31,000 for the winning team. You saw them wanting to win. The NBA All-Star game, like I said, it is a farce. It is just everyone chuck it up. It's all about me, which is really describes the NBA to me. Which is why I don't love it. Max, there's not a lot of great games in the NBA. And right now, speaking of that, tell me, is there any chance of an NBA Finals that doesn't consist of Golden State Warriors in the West and the Cleveland Cavaliers in the East? And I know you're going to say, well, San Antonio can get in there.
No.
Mags,
no,
it
I'm
is
not.
Golden State in the West, Cleveland in the East. San Antonio, I would say, is the third best team in the NBA, and you can see them in your rearview mirror if you're the Cavaliers, but they're way back in your rearview mirror.
You know what? I'm not going to discount.
Don't tell me the Toronto Raptors
no.
either. Okay.
There's two teams in the East who right now, to me, could certainly give Cleveland a challenge. And that's the Celtics, because I do think the Celtics, they have a ton of first-round draft picks. I do think they're going to make a move to get somebody else to add to their arsenal. They've got a great team.
Well, they've got a hell of a player. I mean, God.
Isaiah Thomas is phenomenal.
Is he not got to be in the discussion of NBA Player of the Year this year?
Absolutely. But yeah. I also think that Brad Stevens would coach circles around Tyronn Lue. I think if the Celtics can get one more guy, they are definitely in the mix in the East. They would have no chance in the West, but it's the East, so they do have a chance. And I'm not going to sleep on the Washington Wizards. I understand.
I like the Wizards, too.
I understand they've never really made a push since Wes Unseld was playing for them in the 70s. And my buddy Wendell Wallace is probably going to say, Magnum, you're crazy, man. But you know, I think the Wizards are in the mix. I don't know if they have the depth, but Bradley Beal, John Wall, and they've made Otto Porter a good player. I don't know if they're as good as the Celtics, but they can certainly push the Celtics and the Cavaliers. And you know what? If Kevin Love doesn't come back at 100% and Kyrie Irving, he's not exactly the bastion of health either. You're asking LeBron James to do an awful lot.
Do you remember,
he
Max,
is amazing.
Let me ask you, do you remember 3 years ago, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love were both missing, and LeBron James did it all by himself as far as he could take him, which was all the way to the NBA Finals.
But that's the Celtics and the Wizards are, and even the Raptors, who I'm not sold on at all, and even after they get Serge Ibaka, I'm still not sold on them. But they're all better than they were 3 years ago. There was no other team. Who was going to push the Cavs 3 years ago? There was nobody in the East that was going to give them a run. Now you've got two teams, maybe three, if the Raptors get their act together, who could push them.
Mags, I think that two teams in the West could push the Cavs better than the Celtics and the Washington Wizards, my opinion. And I think the San Antonio Spurs or the Houston Rockets, I think, would be formidable opponents for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Although I think Houston would get beat, I think San Antonio could take down the Cavaliers in the East potentially. But I'm just telling you, like I said, to me, it's just write the book right now. Who's going to win the NBA Finals? I can't see Golden State losing this year like they did last year.
It seems very unlikely.
Oh, my God. I mean, right now, people, if you can find anywhere giving you 2.5 to 1, which I've heard their places giving you that at the Golden State, jump all over it. Be on that like a hobo on a ham sandwich. I mean, that is a great bet. Golden State is a juggernaut right now. And, you know, back to the All-Star game, and I said I wasn't going to mention it very much, but I do want to see the drama. The only thing I want to see in the All-Star game, Mags, and I might record it because I can't sit and watch it. I can't do it. What I might do is record it just to find out if, in fact, Steve Kerr put his four All-Stars on the floor with Russell Westbrook at the same time. That's the only drama that's making the All-Star game worthy of watching it for a few minutes. Is that would be kind of interesting to see those five on the court playing together. Would be kind of cool. Other than that, man, like I said, it's a snore.
Yeah, and I think that adds a little intrigue to it, the Westbrook and the Warriors aspect. Honestly, I don't really care, though. I mean,
I don't even tell you the truth.
It adds intrigue to it, but I don't care. I'm not going to stay. I didn't stay up late last night. Oh my gosh, is Steve Kerr going to play? You know, Westbrook with Durant? And I mean, I think the Warriors had a little fun with it on Friday when they were interviewed about it, and I think he will play Westbrook with those four guys just to kind of...
You know what you can just tell, Mags, and I'm sorry, I don't give a crap. I'm not going to talk to these guys. I don't think I'll have either one, any of them on the show until they're retired. At this point, unless you got a national show, these guys aren't coming on while they're playing. Might get them in the offseason, but Russell Westbrook just looks like an ass, and I guarantee that he is an ass. You can tell. Kevin Durant wanted out of there, not because Westbrook is a ball hog, which he is. I mean, Granted, he scores a triple-double every night, and he's made the triple-double boring, which I never thought I would say, but it's becoming commonplace. Everybody scores it. You got six guys in the league that could score a triple-double on any given night now. It's not special like it used to be, but he's an ass, and that's why I want to see him on the floor, because I would love to see Golden State, like the four of them, play a keep-away from Russell Westbrook and not give him the ball, although you know that won't happen.
Well, I think Draymond Green actually joked about doing that.
Oh,
you know,
we're gonna
play keep away. We'll just pass it to each other.
That'll
let the guy
so
feel left
great.
Out. That would be funny, yeah. But you know, I think the Steph Curry kind of said it. He's like, you know, it's the All-Star game. It's about showcasing the league. It's not about individual stats or egos. But I wouldn't be surprised if Russell Westbrook ends up winning the All-Star game MVP. I do think the West will win the game. And I'm sure Westbrook will do everything in his power to make sure that he lights
up the
stat line.
I'd rather see Harden get another one than Westbrook. I really would. I mean, I'd much rather see the Beard get one more than Russell Westbrook. I just, like I said, I can't wrap my arms around the guy. And it brings up another point. I made it a point that I'm going to try to stick to the show log. But I know. But I got to tell you this, and we'll take this going into break. We can talk a little bit about this after the break, but I do want to talk about Gino Auriemma as well. But I want to say this, and, you know, it amazes me how different the NBA is now than it was then and how many people are enamored with it. Because the bottom line is, Mags, there is not a player in the league, and I'm speaking of LeBron James as well, that can sniff Michael Jordan's jockstrap in his prime. That guy was just a difference maker. Michael Jordan was like a Barry Sanders on a basketball court. You never knew when you were going to see something special. You know, you see stuff special every night with LeBron James, but it doesn't wow me. Michael Jordan had this wow effect. He wasn't so physically imposing and as like LeBron James being so big, being able to do what he does with the ball. Michael Jordan was just an athletic, you know, I hate using old cliches, but poetry in motion, man, on a basketball court. He was special. And he, after Magic Johnson and Larry Bird revolutionized the NBA back in the early 80s when they got that great rivalry between the Celtics and the Lakers going, and it was wonderful watching basketball, Michael Jordan not only continued to carry the torch, he, man, made that torch flame even higher. I don't know that there'll ever be a player like Michael Jordan again, because you know what? To this day, there's never been another Babe Ruth. And we're talking about a guy that died long before I was born, and I've been here for over a half century. I don't know that we'll ever see another Michael Jordan in our lifetime. LeBron James isn't him, so please don't bring that to me. I would take Magic Johnson in his prime over LeBron James. I would. I really would. I think he was a better all-around player, a less selfish player, and I've never seen a man able to pass a basketball like Magic Johnson. Listen, we're going to take a break. Like I said, we've got could talk a little Gino Auriemma. And hey, stick around. Emily Van Buskirk, one of the most knowledgeable people I know on college football and basketball, is going to be joining the show in a little bit. And again, she'll help us with our brackets. I need that help too. We'll be right back.
I always love when things like this happen because it's like a miracle that it doesn't happen more often. You know, you see how easy it is for this to happen. You say, how does this not happen more often? If you're going to stand up there and go, yeah, we're great, when you win them all, then stand up there and say, yeah, you know what? We suck today. And Tulane was better than us. And be honest. You know? When you've won as much as we've won, you better learn how to accept not playing well.
I'm sorry I have to laugh at that, but Gino Auriemma pissed that his team only won by 3 points in their 101st consecutive victory. Although I have to say, I think it's been like the six prior games before that. What did they win? They've won by average of like over 40 points, 40-plus points in the six-game wins prior to that. 38% from the field is the lowest shooting percentage UConn has had in their 101 games stretch. And check it out. They've only been under 40% shooting in two games in that 101 games. Both of them were against Tulane. A little bit of irony, but you want to say Tulane has their number because they lose by three? No, nobody has their number. And before I get into that, I just want to really quick rehash, Max. I didn't get your opinion on that. What I said about Michael Jordan before the break, as far as the greatest ever and putting him in basketball in Babe Ruth, basically, iconic. When you talk about iconic figures, I would label Michael Jordan that iconic figure of basketball that I would put Babe Ruth in baseball. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I think you know, it's hard for us to ever imagine what Babe Ruth was to baseball, because obviously none of us were alive when he was. I mean, if you were alive when he was playing, then you're pretty old right now.
You're real old.
Yeah, you're not one of us, I can tell you that. But we got to see not just how big Michael Jordan was in the NBA, but globally. You know, I've lived in Asia, and Michael Jordan shoes, Air Jordans, are just as popular in places like Japan and Hong Kong and Singapore as they are in Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles. Michael Jordan, I would walk through the mall in Taipei where I lived, and I would see T-shirts with Michael Jordan's picture on them. They were selling, and I couldn't find one of my size because I really wanted it. They were selling the T-shirt of Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny when they made Space Jam, and Bugs Bunny was being called Hair Jordan, hair like rabbit. But I just couldn't find it in my size. Michael Jordan was not just...
I'd love one of those.
Oh, it was cool.
I would love one of those. I love... You know, it's so ironic. I just recently, again, me and Shauna just started watching Space Jam.
Oh, it's a great movie.
It's a phenomenal movie. I love it. It's classic.
And, you know,
I'd like them to make an updated version with newer NBA players.
I've heard that they were. I don't know.
I mean, you know, you've got Sean Bradley in that one.
Yeah. But Barkley and Bill Murray. How great was Bill Murray in Space Jam, by the way? Oh, it was awesome.
Tremendous. The whole thing was just it was outstanding. It was a great movie. And but really, Michael Jordan, it was nice that he stood alone, and Michael Jordan and a bunch of Looney Tune characters beat the monsters in the movie with some of Michael Jordan's special sauce or whatever. I forgot what he called it.
He basically put water in, but he called it
the special sauce. I forget what he called it, but it was great. But the point is, Michael Jordan was that good. The special sauce was in Michael Jordan. And you know, Mags, he got everyone wearing Nike shoes. He got everyone drinking Gatorade. Michael Jordan was truly, the Be Like Mike campaign was tremendous, because everybody that was an athlete, and especially if you were a basketball player, you wanted to be like Mike. And even if you couldn't even dribble a basketball, you wanted to be like Mike. Well, listen, I don't want to get too far with this. I want to go back to the Gino Auriemma thing. And I got to tell you, you know, why do I have so much trouble wrapping my arms around saying that Gino Auriemma, should be mentioned with the greatest coaches in history, in basketball coaches. I have trouble with that, and it's so unfair. Max, am I being sexist?
No, you're being logical. He's not. He doesn't belong. I don't care how many games he wins. He doesn't belong in the discussion with guys like Bobby Knight, Mike Krzyzewski, Jerry Tarkanian.
John Wooden.
He doesn't belong in the discussion. And I'll tell you why he doesn't belong in the discussion. Because women's college basketball is a joke. It sucks. It's horrifically bad. There's like 13 girls in the entire country who could play at a high level. And you know what? I'm going to give props to Centennial High School, because what that coach does there, they're a public school. They never lose, and I could guarantee you that the coach at Centennial High School could take her team and she could beat some of these Division I women's college teams. I have no doubt in my mind that they could beat some of these lower level. They might be able to beat some teams in the WAC, the Big West, because all those girls are Division I players on that roster.
So what I'm saying is a coach over there is doing a hell of a job.
Yes, but it's she can't recruit. It's high school.
Yeah, so she's got a turn. And I understand.
Gino Auriemma gets every single five-star girls player. There's just not enough talent in that sport for there to be any type of competitiveness. Pat Summitt left Tennessee. What happened? They fell off. I think they're still ranked.
They don't recruit. They're not recruiting like she could. But
the coach from Stanford, Tara Vanderveer, she's won over 1,000 games as a head coach at a women's Division I program or in her college career coaching. That's more than 341 women's programs total. There's 341 women's programs. UNLV is probably one of them that hasn't won 1,000 games. This coach has more wins than all of them.
Okay.
It's a horrible sport. I can't watch it. And it's nothing against Gino Auriemma, because you know what? He might be an amazing coach, but I have no idea, because the sport is so bad. It's so watered down with lack of talent.
I still think, Magnum, and I'm going to say this, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I have trouble watching women's college basketball. I really do. You know, when they get to the Final Four and stuff, I'll catch myself. I'm a junkie with sports, so I'll catch myself watching a game. But to your point, which is really good, one player in women's college basketball, a great player, can elevate a team and take them all the way to the Final Four. And we saw that with, like, a Donna Deladone.
Yeah,
I mean, she plays
Elena
at a school that is absolutely not. No, what school did she go? It was on the East Coast with Vermont.
No, she played at Delaware, University of Delaware.
That's right, yeah. Delaware.
Fighting Hens.
I mean, are you kidding me? The Blue Hens of Delaware.
Yeah.
And she took them, I think, to the Sweet 16, maybe beyond. Did she get to the Elite Eight?
I think they got to the Elite Eight.
Elite Eight. They would never and will never do that again. But
no.
It's one player. It shows you what a difference she can make. Because Ariama wanted her badly at Connecticut. But that shows you the difference. So I'm going to say that's your point. But I believe that Gino Ariama, let me get that out correctly, could coach men's basketball. And not only could he, Mags, I think he could do it at a very high level. I think because of what he's accomplished, he's coached 1,014 games, and he's won, what has he won, like 800, 900 of them? 980 games, lost 134. That's almost a 90% clip of winning. John Wooden, who many people still say is the Wizard of Westwood, the greatest of all time, coached 826 games and won at an 80% clip, which is amazing in the college level. I mean, at the men's collegiate level on the men's side. But I say because of what Gino has accomplished on the women's side, the respect factor is through the roof, even on the men's side. If he went to a men's program, I believe if he was sitting in your living room recruiting your son, you would look at the body of work he's put in with the women and say, you know what? He gets these women to graduate. He gets the most out of them. The one thing is that they all leave the school and every one of them speak so highly of him. Years later, even ones, Mags, that didn't play very much, speak how much he has shaped and molded their lives. Now, that could be simply a politically correct thing to say. You don't see very many people post-program talking crap about their coaches. But the way and the passion his players, current and post, speak about him, I just don't know. There's got to be something to it, Mags, and I've got to bring myself to the point that when I talk about great collegiate coaches, I've got to put him into that mix. I have to.
I can't.
Because I put Pat Summitt into that mix.
I don't put Pat Summitt in there either.
I do.
Because the sport, it's so watered down. It's so bad.
It's bad.
And you know what? Here's the thing. Because I don't want to sound like a sexist and rail against, I love women. I mean, I'm not, I know that now that sounds even worse, right? But, you know, the thing is, I respect what he's done for the simple reason that there's never been a scandal. In all the years he's been there and they've been winning games.
Good point.
They have never, ever, ever had any type of academic issue. They've never had it. And maybe because he doesn't need to, but you see North Carolina, perfect example. The NCAA let them get away with it, of course. But academic fraud. I mean, they could have lost their rating as an institution of higher learning so that the basketball and the football players could play. You don't see that type of thing going on in the women's basketball program at UConn.
No, you do not.
And much, much respect to him and that program because it's a clean program. And you know what? I can respect that. I think it's awesome that he does that. And like you said, these girls, they leave there. They come in as young girls. They leave as women. And that's another great aspect to his ability to coach. I just can't say he's one of the greatest coaches. I just can't do it because he's never had any adversity to face as the head coach of the program. So, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, he had his problems, you know, with teams. So, you know, I just can't do it, man. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, Mags, I think that he sometimes forgets that he's coaching women's basketball. And he had a little faux pas after yesterday's game.
And what happened today was the wrong team won. A couple of those kids from Tulane just played their hearts out. You know, it's a shame that they had to lose the game because my guys had no business winning the game.
His guys had no business winning the game. I wonder how his 13 players would feel about that statement. It kind of went over everybody's head. Like, oh, it's just a generic thing to say you guys. I don't know, Mags. When I coached my daughter's soccer team, I always referred to them as my girls or you girls. I never thought of them as guys. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a compliment on his end, but wow is all I could say. Listen, Emily Van Buskirk on the other side. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports 1340.
1 point Kansas lead, 2.8 to go. Here's Evans from half court. And it's short, and Kansas escapes by the skin of their teeth. Another one-possession heartbreaking loss for Chris Beard. And Bill Self's Kansas Jayhawks have their 22nd win of the season, the 28th consecutive year they've done that.
funny. Kansas, first 19 games, they were 18-1 with a 15.1 points per game differential. In their last eight games, they're 6-2 and with a 0.03 points per game differential.
Big 12 is so good. I mean, I know ACC gets a lot of love, but the Big 12 is really, really good. So many good teams there.
It is tough. And Kansas, I'll tell you what, they squeaked by. You heard the win just now. That was against Texas Tech a week ago Saturday. They won that game 80-79 when it looked like Texas Tech had it in the bag. And then I jinxed West Virginia, who was looking to sweep Kansas. They were up by 14 points with 2:45 to go. And I start texting out. I'm texting Chris Wynn. I'm texting Magnum. I'm texting Emily Van Busker. Like, oh, my God, especially Emily, because she has a thing in reverse for Bob Huggins. Not a big fan. But, wow, cost him 25K. It's like I jinxed him. Everyone was saying, like, never leave Dick Vitale's. Like, they're leaving the building. How can they leave? And they shouldn't have left. A lot of them came back. But
some shoddy officiating there at Fog Allen as well. End of the game.
But you still got to play. And, I mean, 14 points and 2:45 was an incredible comeback.
When a guy is standing inside the paint on an inbounds play and you call a five-second call on West Virginia.
It was bad. I was watching the game. I've seen a lot of shady stuff go on in Kansas over the years in the tournament back in old Kemper Arena. I have definitely seen some funky things, but I've told you, Kansas, I just, something about them. I mean, they are an extremely gifted team. There is no doubt about it. Frank Mason, Josh Jackson, Devontae Graham, these guys can play basketball. I mean, four of their five starters average over 10 points a game, but the bottom line is I just don't feel good about him. Welcome to the show. Now I want to bring her on, sitting on hold, Emily Van Buskirk. She is the lead writer for college and basketball, football and basketball, let me say, for the sportsfanjournal.com. She knows as much about the college game as anybody out there. And I'm going to pose this question to both Emily and Magnum, because I want your opinion, both of this. I need one of you to convince me why I should believe in this year's edition of the undefeated Gonzaga Bulldogs. Em, what do you think? Does Mark Few, is he going to get something done this year?
You hit it on the head there, because that's an argument I've been having with myself and pretty much anyone that'll listen since college basketball started. I'm not a believer. I don't buy in. I went to a WCC school. I went to St. Mary's, in fact, and I've been making this argument for as long as I can remember that it's not real. They may be undefeated. They may have great players, and the West Coast may be resurging in basketball, but the WCC is not a litmus test of how good a team can be. There's just no competition there. Yes, St. Mary's is all right. Santa Clara is fun to watch, but it's not enough of a challenge. They haven't played a Baylor. They haven't played, you know, an Oregon. They did beat Arizona, which is impressive, but Arizona, in my opinion, has been hit or miss this year as well. So I can't sell you on it because I'm not sold either.
Yeah, well, they beat Florida too, but that was way at the beginning of the season. And no, I don't. I am having the same issue. Like I said, they're a fun team to watch. You know, I think five teams before them in the past 35 years have started 28-0. How many of those, Em? I'm sure you know. How many of them have won a national title?
None.
Not a single damn one of them have. And I would say the five other than Gonzaga were all better teams than the Gonzaga Bulldogs are this year. I want someone to, I like, put it this way, I will not argue this point against anyone. Mark Few is a great recruiter and a great assessor of talent, and he's able to blend them together, and he has created a juggernaut in the West Coast Conference. I mean, they just have a stranglehold on it. St. Mary's is a good team for that conference, and I think they've only got, what, three losses on the year, and two of them are to the Zags, and they get pounded by the Zags. Now, they go ahead and they beat Brigham Young, they beat Santa Clara, some other formidable teams in the conference, but oh my God, I mean, you just can't get a gauge on them until they get in. And but let's rephrase it a little bit. Is this team, M, as good as any Mark Few's had and maybe has the best chance to go the distance or at least get to the Final Four this year?
I think so. I think he's always set up a good system, and his players play very well within the system. But again, it's hard to tell without a true test. You know, you did mention the Florida win. They did beat Iowa State. I think Arizona's the best game that we can see them working together, and they move well as a unit, and they can take down fast players. They play fast. That's helpful. But when you come up against strong, big guys like in Kansas, or, you know, if they came up against Dylan Brooks, I think it would just expose, you know, the lack of competition that they haven't had to play against. And while they're good, that can only take you so far if you haven't been challenged. You know, in the tournament, you need to be able to win games like Kansas has been winning. You know, you need to show grit and heart. And I don't think you could do that unless you had to play against top competition. So I do think they're good. I don't think they're going to get past the Elite Eight.
Yeah, they'll probably go down in the Sweet 16 again. Listen, as I mentioned, I love Mark Few. And, you know, I believe he deserves to be mentioned when talking about the best coaches of today's game. I just talked about another one, Junior Ariema, and I told Magnum I really have trouble. And I almost feel sexist because I have so much trouble spitting out that he's one of the best coaches in college basketball, maybe in basketball history, and I have trouble with it. But with Mark Few, no trouble saying that he's one of the best coaches in today's game. He without question deserves a seven-figure salary that he gets at Gonzaga. But, who's the top coach in college, in your opinion, right now? Who's at the top of the list?
Really tough, because, you know, I'm biased a little bit with Kansas, but I've always been a fan of Dana Altman at Oregon. I think he's gotten, you know, he's had a tough time of it with some of the things that have happened there, and a lot of the bad incidences on campus with the students and the players, and recruiting the guy that had sexual assault history. But I think I've spent a lot of time around Dana Altman on the court, and I think what he does for his players and how he motivates them is very impressive. It's hard because Oregon's been a little bit up and down as well, and that's due largely to the Pac-12 being, you know, carnivorous and cannibalistic, and they can't let one team succeed. So I don't put that all on him, but he's one of my favorite coaches. Obviously, Bill Self is also one. But I think I like the point you guys made about the Big 12 earlier. They don't get enough love as being the best conference. So I think any coach that has to coach in the Big 12 is all right in my book.
I would agree with that 100%. There's some other coaches, I'll tell you what, in the Pac-12, besides Dana Altman, I got to give some props over to Sean Miller in Arizona. He keeps refueling that squad. And, you know, Steve Alford hasn't done too bad of a job coming into coming into UCLA, I should say, especially, you know, I mean, you know, he came in there. It wasn't a thankless position, but a lot was expected of him. He kind of left like a thief in the night at New Mexico, went over there, and he's done really well. His son is proving that he deserves to be on the basketball court on a regular basis. He's proving to be one of the better guards in the country right now. I like both of those guys a lot. I agree with you 100% on Bill Self. He is one of my favorite coaches. I was so bummed that I had my hernia surgery when Kansas played UNLV, because he's one of the few guys I've never met or interviewed, and I was really bummed because I really wanted to meet him. But there's other guys I like too. The guy that used to coach here that's coaching up in Oklahoma, you got to give Lon Kruger some props.
Yeah,
he's done a hell of a job. And, you know, as much as you want to say about Calipari and Patino and the continuous ridiculous talent pool they seem to draw from, you can't take away from their ability either. They continue to find, you know, Calipari gets the one-hit wonders that, you know, everyone says, oh, you don't want a one-hit guy. He keeps getting them, and he keeps winning with him. I mean, Malik Monk is one of the greatest talents I've seen in a long, long time. This guy scares me how good I think he's going to be in the NBA down the road. So you got to look at all those guys. Of course, I'm short of time as always, but I want to ask you also, you know, right now, because people are filling out their brackets and everything else, you know, and I think there's a lot of teams that have a shot. Let's talk about three teams in the Pac-12 that the only three teams I think that have a prayer at doing anything would be UCLA, Oregon, Arizona, to do something in Pac-12. But overall, who are you looking for as a favorite, and who's a sleeper of yours with the tournament as of right now?
That's a good question. I think that, as I said before, Oregon is one of my favorite teams to watch, because I think they have the most complete system out of all of them. You know, Dylan Brooks, leading them. He's such a gamer. He makes these baskets at the end of games that riles the team up. Their enthusiasm on the court is one of my favorite things to watch, and they don't quite give up. So I like Oregon to go as far as any Pac-12 team to go, but I do also like UCLA. I think you're right about Steve Alford. He took him some time to turn it around, but, you know, they have the kid Lonzo Ball, and if you talk to Lonzo Ball's dad, he's going to be better than Steph Curry. So what else could you want in a player?
They're solid, and I'll close on this. You know, the team that I talked about earlier, and I joked about Bob Huggins, but there is a reason the BPI has Virginia, at least coming into this week, as the number two team in the country, which is amazing with six losses. But that is how tough of a schedule Bob Huggins has put the Mountaineers through this year, and they are going to be a tough out, no question about it. I think, you know, Virginia might be, they just lost again, but I think they're really tough as well. But, you know, and another team I like down there that not a lot of people are talking about, they've only got three losses, the Cincinnati Bearcats might surprise some teams, and don't surprise you if they get deep too. Listen, I gotta go. I apologize them. Emily Van Buskirk, lead writer for the sportsfanjournal.com for college football and basketball. Definitely go to the website and check it out. And Em, go ahead and tell them your Twitter address. I won't screw it up. I want to hear them from you.
It's at MLM, like Eminem, but with an L.
There you go. That's the best way. I got to start putting it that way. As always, great talking to you, and we got the tournaments coming up. I know I'll be seeing you in town for the Pac-12 tournament, and we'll be talking to you definitely very shortly down the road.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Bye.
That's Emily Van Busker. Now we got to fly right into Blazin. And hold on, let me find my Blazin here. I got all over the board, Mags. I got excited.
Oh, boy.
So,
I could go ahead.
Well,
if
it's
you want.
Okay. I just want to let you know, I got to let them know the little tagline. Blazin at the 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. At Buffalo Wild Wings, you'll experience two happy hours every day featuring $4 apps. The place is surrounded by flat screens and TVs, so you never miss a play. Tons of draft beer, spirits, and wine. And of course, there is no place better in America than Buffalo Wild Wings for wings, beer, and sports. And I'm just going to be real quick, Mags. Run it right now for me. You got the fight song, because they deserve it. I got to tell you about this pretty incredible UNLV golf team. Oh. There we go. Well, let me tell you about UNLV's golf team. They just competed in the 41st annual John A. Burns Intercollegiate Golf Tournament in Lihue, Hawaii. They shot a final round cumulatively, six of them, 14 under par on Friday, and they finished in third place behind the number 9 ranked Virginia Mountaineer Cavaliers, and also number 25, I think it was Texas Tech or Texas A&M, was in there as well. This is a solid team. Harry Hall's a sophomore, shot six under in the final round to finish tied for third. All of UNLV's players, except for one, finished in the top 15. Pretty impressive when there was 109 golfers in the tournament. UNLV's golf team, man, they deserve a Blazin. They don't get a lot of shout-outs and not a lot of followers. But Dwayne Knight, the coach, has turned out some pretty good players on the PBA. Guys like Adam Scott, of course, Ryan Moore. Yes. There's been some pretty good players that have played at UNLV, but, man, they're Blazin. What do you got for me, Mags?
I'm going to go with two college basketball programs in the state of New Jersey. Princeton, team I grew up watching, and Monmouth, another team I grew up watching. Between the two of them, they've won a combined 25 games in a row. Monmouth became the first Division I program to clinch the regular season title in their conference. They did so the other night in the Metro Atlantic. Princeton, they have a two-game lead. They've swept Yale, who was expected to challenge them for the Ivy League crown. They have a two-game lead with four games to go. Princeton and Monmouth both could be making appearances in the NCAA tournament. And as a New Jersey native, guy from the Jersey Shore, I love that.
You got to like that. I like the Blazin. Blazin brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Two happy hours every day. No place in America better for wings, beer, and sports. That is Buffalo Wild Wings at 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. And we were going to take another break, Mags. I'm just going to go right quickly to Fact This. And we don't even need to hear the promo. Listen, here's the deal. You got the Menzies. The Menzies thing up there. See if you can find that for me.
Oh, boy, we don't have it. I don't know where it is.
Okay,
yet.
Well, if you can find it, just you can run it at any second now, because this is a typical press conference at UNLV these days. Oh, you don't have it? Okay, well, anyways, the fact is this. UNLV has a game today at 1 o'clock, a rare Sunday game. They're at San Diego State. If they lose, it would be their 17th loss of the season. UNLV has never in history lost more than 16 games. This is what will happen. They will lose their 17th game today, and they won't win another game this season until the tournament. People think Utah State, they got a chance. No, they're going to lose that game at home against Utah State. Here's what I think, Megs. I think they're going to get San Diego State. They're going to be the 11th seed. Excuse me, San Jose State in the 6th seed, and they're going to beat them in the first round of the tournament. I don't know why. That's what I think. It'll make Menzies' year. It'll get everyone excited to go into next year, and that's it. But that's my fact, this man. They are going to lose 17 games this year. Wow, is all I can say. Hey, listen, we're about out of time. This is the end. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Emily Van Buskirk. Thanks, Magnum. Out of line, out of time, 8 to 9 every Sunday morning. We'll be back next week.